T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back. It's 10:38 on WBEM. Brian Mazurowski, Charlie Specht in studio here taking your calls, and now joined by Father Richard Biernat, who we're hearing from now. Again, it's been about a week, Father Richard, since you came out as the second whistleblower. And I'm just kind of wondering, first off the bat, what this week has been like for you. Before we get to some of your comments, you've gone from being a right-hand man to the bishop to being someone who's in the spotlight for a very different reason.
It's been an interesting week for me. First of all, the number of messages I've been getting day and night constantly, probably got over 1,000 messages from people of support, and probably 60 or 70 people offered their homes for me to live there. Had people who have no faith, atheists, Jewish people reaching out to me, offering their homes, support, meals, whatever I need. One disappointing fact is the deafening silence from my brother priests, though. You know, I only had the 4 priests reach out to me, learning what I went through at the hands of Art Smith and Bishop Grosch.
Why do you think that is?
I'm puzzled. I'm really hurt by it, knowing that I've served this diocese. I've worked with my brother priests for years. And why is that? I don't know the answers. I wish somebody, I would ask them. Maybe Charlie could go and ask why there's so little support towards Father Richard. And I'm not asking for people to agree with me what I've done, but acknowledge the hurt that I went through, the suffering, pain.
There is a real extreme fear of retribution, what I've heard from many of the priests, not so much in supporting Father Richard. That seems like that could be done, personally behind the scenes, and it sounds like he's pretty rightfully disappointed by that. But there is a fear of retribution among many of the priests coming out right now, publicly signing on with this letter that Father Bob Ziliax has been circulating. I'll tell you an anecdote that a priest had passed along to me, that had a meeting a few years ago. There was a priest that stood up and, questioned something that the bishop had said. And he said, apparently on the way out of Mass, the bishop came by and said something to the effect of, if you're not careful, I'm going to reassign you down to Wellsville. So that was something that I thought, well, there is a real fear among many of these priests that that there will be some retribution if they do speak out against the bishop. A lot of people are pointing to the vow of obedience, but I did have a priest, and maybe you can clear this up, Father Richard. I did have a priest who told me that vow is not necessarily required if there is some sort of injustice that you're being asked to perpetuate.
Of course, that's the this bishop should not cannot require you to do anything that's immoral or unjust. So that would not apply. But I agree with you. There's a certain fear that if not now, what if the next bishop comes and they will know that you spoke out against previous bishops. So then you will be marked in that sense.
You weren't necessarily afraid of going to Wellsville. You were afraid of going back to Poland.
Yes, and it's not simply that I was afraid to go to Poland, to go back to the country I'm from. I love that country and my family and friends there. The thing was that would have been connected too with me not being able to be a priest. No matter if I was here or there, I would still not be able to be a priest, because what happens is that if you move to another diocese, the first thing they do, they call where you come from. So they would call Bishop Grosch and ask, hey, what do you think of Richard? Is he a good candidate? And I could only imagine what Bishop Grosch would say.
So there's been a lot of attention on Bishop Grosch ever since, you know, we reported your allegations against him. He came out, he didn't come out. Through a spokeswoman, Kathy Spangler, yesterday denied to the Buffalo News that he had made these threats against you, and then he sort of made a denial about the Father Becker remark here. Do you have any response to the bishop's denial through a spokeswoman?
Yes, but I would like to connect that with Mrs. Kane, Jennifer Kane from Walliams, who, and by the way, thank you to people of St. Francis in Tonawanda and St. Mary of the Angels in Olean. They've been more than supportive. And Jennifer Kane for years helped me, advised me, was my spiritual director, and believed me and was there by my side. And in December, she sent those first letter to the seminary that was ignored, then to Bishop's Council of the Laity. And what's interesting that there was no attempt on the part of the diocese to correct the narrative. Nobody got back to Jennifer Kane saying, like, listen, Bishop Grosch totally denies these allegations. He was with me in the meeting when we were reading this. And the response from the bishop was, Richard, could you call Jennifer to tell her that you're okay, that there's no point to bring up old stuff from the past? No, you're okay, and no, she doesn't need to worry about correcting the story, you know, because you're okay, right? Can you call her? And there was a lot of pressure on me, so I'll probably call her, yes, but I didn't because, you know, when I thought of it, sometimes, you know, I need to sleep over stuff in order to understand what's going on, and Bishop was totally, you know, trying me, the victim, clean up for them, you know, cover up for them. It was appalling.
Richard, I'm wondering if you can kind of shed a little bit of light on. We've had a lot of people make comments on the difference between abuse of children and abuse that happens to an adult. Your frame of mind, how do you believe you were susceptible to be abused in the way you were?
Well, I was in on many levels a very vulnerable person at that time. I had no family here in this country. I had some distant relatives, but no family here, no friends. I'm new in this country. This was only my 16, 17 months here, so not even 2 years. I've never had English before, so I was just, you know, knew enough English to order latte at Starbucks, you know. So I was in that sense a perfect prey for a predator, because, you know, I knew very little about the country, very little about the justice system here. I did not have support, so it was very easy to groom and very easy to keep quiet.
Father Richard, a lot of people since the story ran have been asking me, wow, you know, knowing his story and what he went through, I can't even believe that he went on to become a priest. So why did you, you know, decide to stick with it and not just give up altogether?
Charlie, it's quite emotional to respond to this. It was people like Jennifer. I have hundreds of people in my life that have been so awesome and supportive and that I feel in the depth of my soul that was the purpose that God made me for, to be a priest. I never wanted to be a priest to be part of a hierarchy or institution, but to serve the people. And actually, Jennifer Kane and many others showed me and taught me what the church is about and what the ministry is about, and so it's because of the lay people that I stuck with it and became a priest.
Did you ever feel that you were helping to cover for other priests in the diocese who had done something either in the past or present?
No, because I was quite vocal at the senior staff meetings. You know, when you know, for example, for Father Yeder, I remember being in a meeting. I still feel my hand, you know, from pounding on the table. Like, abuse is abuse. When there were discussion of the three young men that he was, they were over age 18, but under 21, he was giving them alcohol. He was making sexual advances on them, you know, and grabbing their crotch and all that stuff. And that was only, and I don't want to go more into details as we talked earlier. You know, there's so much you can say on the radio. And I took a roll call. I said, you know, because we were, Bishop Malone was always rushing somewhere. I said, before we go, you know, we need to make a decision on Father Yeder. And all of us said he needs to go. Months and months before, you know, the story broke out. And so all of us at the senior staff said he needs to go. And what did Bishop Malone do? Kept him in. And you know, so Bishop Malone may sometimes say, oh, with consultation with his senior staff, it doesn't mean that with support of senior staff, he might have, you know, hear us, but did often contrary to what we would suggest. And he often did, you know, like in case of Father Yeder, he did that contrary to senior staff and also Father Croglio, who was a vicar for priests.
Father Richard, I just want to read for people the language that Bishop Malone used in the Father Yeder case, which you mentioned. When he confronted Father Yeder, the bishop wrote in a memo, he totally downplays any evil intent. He says his hand was on Kyle's thigh only momentarily. And then at the review board meeting, it says here that diocesan lawyer Lawler Quinlan said, while his conduct was certainly inappropriate, there was some concern that Father Yeder should not be treated more harshly than other priests who have been accused by adults of offensive or sexual contact. Can you talk about the role, the whole system that the diocese has here when it comes to lawyers and review boards and all this? It sounds kind of like a complicated process when the bishop gets up there and talks about it. Can you talk about how effective this entire sort of bureaucracy that's been established within the church is?
See, the issue with the review board is, you know, as much as they want to call it independent, it's all run by attorneys. You know, there is no minutes from those meetings. You know, it's. I remember Father Mark Noonan last year. That was a big part. I think big part of his departure from his role was wanting to have notes from Father Yeder. The writer, I mean, Father Ryder's case, you know, and because he was to go to, you know, be there when he was returned to ministry, you know, Bishop Malone didn't want to go, Bishop Gross didn't want to go, and Father Mark had to go be there to represent the diocese. And I remember Father Mark was insisting on getting some of the minutes, notes, and he never received it as a you know, second in command in the diocese, the attorneys never provided those to him, and it's all run by them, and you know with.
Did you say that the diocese didn't provide them, or that they didn't take the notes at all? They did. They don't have minutes of the meeting.
I don't know. I don't know if they keep notes or not, because we yet have to. You know, even Sister Regina keeps asking, like, you know, Those are, you know, we make decisions about the priests, but we have nothing in our archives to you know, back one way or the other, you know, in the decisions, you know, like everything is with our attorneys. So it's all run by the attorneys, and I wish that review board was a little bit more independent of our attorneys.
Richard, the bishop last week on our station said he believes he has the support of priests in the diocese. He believes he has the support of the congregation, that he gets a lot of messages supporting him. Is that really the case in your experience working hand in hand with the bishop? Are things being kept from him in the terms of negative comments?
Oh, by his own orders. You know, he ordered us a number of meetings not to forward to him any negative messages. So because of that, he's telling the truth, because the most messages he gets are support, because he refused. He told us not to forward any negative stuff to him.
So on that point, I just want to mention here that this is a story we're working on as we speak here. Sometime over the weekend, it was suggested, after that news conference, the bishop sort of invited people to contact him, because he had said that, well, I've received 10 to 12 emails, very supportive, and people started contacting me saying, well, we'd like to contact the bishop and tell him that we don't support him. So I went on the diocese website and looked, and there was no email listed, and there was also no phone number for his office listed. So people were having a hard time contacting him. People on Twitter had reached out to us and said, well, why don't we send an email to the bishop and copy me onto it? I have to say here, over the last few days, I've gotten probably 50 to 60 emails from people, and these are really heartfelt email messages from devout Catholics in many cases, asking the bishop to resign, in some cases begging the bishop to resign. And what was interesting here was that most of this started on a Sunday. By the end of the night on Sunday, we started getting messages from the bishop saying that a bounced email. The emails were bouncing back because someone, presumably at the Catholic Center, had shut the bishop's email down so that people can no longer contact him if they have any input on whether he should stay or whether he should go. So his email address, bishop.malone@buffalodiocese.org, has apparently been disabled. So people wishing to send comments are no longer able to do that.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.